Attention, citizens! It's time for Super Pulp Science!
This is Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how a genre gets made. I am GMB Kamichuk, a working writer and illustrator. I'm joined by my long-suffering co-host, Justin Curry, known the world over as Chasing Artwork, and our producer extraordinaire, Dan Vadaboncur. I took a deep breath, and rather than tell anyone what we were going to talk about, I just started, and my producer has nodded. Yes, that is what we're going to do.
That's what we do. That's what we do here. We start.
We've got a lot of stuff we could talk about, gentlemen. Winnipeg Comic Con was just on the past weekend. NaNoWriMo has just started. It's the month of November. You've been working on your screenplay, working away in the background. I've been working away on a screenplay. Well, they are paying, and it's a screenplay. Okay. Also. And then also on top of all of that, I have, I think, a cautionary tale that we could share as well.
Isn't that hot goss?
Hot goss.
50% of this podcast content is cautionary tales.
I'm going to try.
It's what not to do.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'll try and frame that encounter, this David and Goliath encounter, as positively and supportively to all parties involved as possible when we get there.
I think that's an insult to David to call this person a David. David wasn't quite so uncouth.
I thought I was staying positive. You just jumped right in.
Yeah,
no
kidding. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, we're not going to tell that story just yet. Now that it's been teased, we'll build it towards the end.
Skip to the time code if you want to hear the story.
That's right. Let's talk. We've been doing a lot of business. If you've been following the show for the last few episodes, we've been doing a lot of business talk. Let's talk creatively for a while. Let's open our creative hearts.
It's a very special time of year for me and you and people at the studio. Convention season is over. There are no more shows, no more traveling until late February, early March of next year. And this is my favorite time of year because I always try to aim to have a clear schedule for this. I don't take on any client work, any projects. I say we're gonna start that, but not right now. I need a couple months to just kind of sit and create and recover.
Yeah.
And do you go in with like no agenda and you're like, I'm just gonna start doing stuff and see where it goes?
I usually have a bunch of personal projects lined in. Yeah. But I try not to fill up my plate with any other things.
Right.
Right.
That must be a lot of fun.
It's very lucky. I feel very, very lucky that I have that ability. Mm-hmm. But I work hard the rest of the year, so I feel like I've also earned it.
You definitely earn it. And, for putting some context related to that, Justin or I have been in some other city every couple of weeks for months, or we've been putting on or planning events every other week for some months or doing public presentations. So the extrovert portion of our souls has had its
depleted.
Yeah. Its batteries are dry, and now it's time to go into cozy introvert mode, and you make a little nest of projects around you and you just weave them together for months, a couple of months anyway. So speaking to that, you've been weaving a project for a good long while.
Yeah, too long, actually.
Right, but anyone who's looking to track down what we're talking about, if you search in our podcast descriptions for the word Meat House, you will see a long collection of times where we've
Four
visited.
Four podcasts now revolving around
It's been a few, and a few on Jonathan's as well, on the Writing the Wrong Way, so there's a few on there. And yeah, it's basically a concept we came up with almost a year ago now. It was actually a year ago. Second week of November at FanQuest. We did a panel. We did a podcast episode. You can listen to that episode. And along with Steve Kostansky, and we came up with this idea for a house that eats people, basically. And then I took that and I expanded it into a screenplay idea. And I've been working on that kind of with Jonathan helping me. Jonathan, of course, teaches screenwriting at the University of Winnipeg, and he has a lot of experience in this field. And so I'm basically trying to expand this into a full screenplay, my first real screenplay. I've never written anything like this before. And my writing experience is purely journalistic. I only write articles for CTV. I've never written any, I would say I've never really written creatively before. I had a little bit of creative writing in school, but I didn't really like it. So I don't know. And it's because they didn't give us screenplays. They didn't want me to write. I would love to write a screenplay. For some reason, this is what's speaking to me. This is where I think I can fit, is writing movies or TV shows, I guess. But anyway, this is where I am. So, and I've been kind of hemming and hawing about it, and I haven't really what I've lacked is actual dedication, time dedicated to doing it. And that's what Jonathan has been telling me this whole time. Just do it. Just start writing it. So I did that. I have already started writing it, but I dedicated an hour yesterday. It is NaNoWriMo, as you said. So NaNoWriMo, and it's funny, I forgot what the no stood for. I thought it was November for a second. National November Writing Month? That doesn't make any sense. It's National Novel Writing Month. It's what the no stands for, and that means that people usually use it to write a novel, right?
Yeah, is
that
try the 50,000 words in 30 days.
Which is ostensibly a novel, I guess.
Yeah, it basically packs in around a novel. It's a good first draft of a novel.
Sure, it gets you started, right? Yeah. Which is the most important step.
Yeah. Was the part of it, too, like you're supposed to start something new? Is like the pure...
Yeah,
no?
If you're doing it pure, okay. Then yeah, you should...
You're supposed to start something.
Start a fresh project and do it every day on a consistent schedule. And one of the great benefits to NaNoWriMo, if you've never done a novel project, is if you stick to a really... ambitious schedule like that, you don't have time to go back and rewrite anything.
Yeah.
And that can be bad for some people's process, but it can be great for people who are having trouble just getting the whole thing out. That's anyone right. can start a story, but finishing a story is part of the complete journey, part, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, and that's what I want to do this month. So that's my goal, is to finish this, get it all out, and once it's out, I can fix it and revise it and do that kind of thing. But it's all in here, and I need to get it out into the page, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
Dan just motioned to his head, and then
it's on my head.
And that's
then,
the here. In
then
basic.
A vomiting motion.
And I got to puke it out. You want sound effects? I can add sound effects if you want.
Into our group chat, I posted, that I got my 1,000+ words in this morning, and a few people were like, oh yeah, it's NaNoWriMo, but I don't always do NaNoWriMo as a novel.
Yes, of course.
Right?
Yeah.
I do it sometimes just to remind myself that in the excitement of this month, all these other people are writing and doing their absolute best, and so I usually start a new project or try really hard to finish a project. Mm. So I have a 5,000 to 7,000 word short story that I'm going to try and have finished by the end of November. And so my 50,000 words will likely include two rewrites of
right,
that
yeah,
story,
and that's okay. That's yeah. part of it, right?
And that's just what I'm going to do. Yep. Stick to a really tight schedule, a little bit tighter than I normally would. And I have my children to thank for this, because one of them has signed up for the school play and so is up at an ungodly hour to get ready for school out the door around 6 a.m. So it means
that's
that
a serious school play.
We are up early in the house, and in that time when I might normally just curl up by the fire with a book, I instead and just wonder why anyone is up this early. I've been using it to try to do 1,000 words every time.
Nice.
There's a few people in New York, hopefully your numbers are growing, who feel we have an opportunity now to forge something real out of everyday experience.
Well, there's also quite a few groups that revolve around this theme this month, the NaNoWriMo theme. So if you are thinking about getting into writing and you want to use this as a springboard, there's lots of online groups that you can join and share your work and get encouragement and be held accountable. Because I know like a lot of people, like they love the idea, but if nobody's checking in and if there's nowhere to put it when it's over, like a lot of that motivation can drain away.
Exactly.
And so, my dear listener, even one word every day is progress.
Well, and it's I'm not even taking it as a writing word counts, because I mean screenplays don't really work like that necessarily.
No, they
go by
not.
Pages, right? Yeah. More than anything else. But I'm just taking an hour every day. That's yeah. really what I'm looking at. It's an hour every day. Yesterday from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. I actually didn't write much. I spent the time writing out my cards and making sure I had all the scenes in my head all the scenes out of my head that I could think of. Everything possible that I could think of to go in the movie. I just wrote down quickly the scene, what it would be, and then the change that happens in the scene, because we need mm-hmm. to know that, right? And then I just wrote those down on cue cards and I had it all mapped out. And then I kind of looked at where what I had written so far for the screenplay and had it organized in my head. So today I'm going to, at some point, sit down and just write for an hour.
A great piece of advice from author Neil Gaiman, which I'm sure is making the rounds right now because of NaNoWriMo.
Oh, sure.
Excuse me. He says that if you set aside some time to write, let's say you have an hour in the morning, you're going to write, simply tell yourself that I can do nothing or I can write, but I can't do anything else. So I can go and sit in that spot and look out the window. I can think about things. I can do whatever I want. But I can't check an email, I can't phone a friend, I can't do anything except nothing. I can do nothing or I can write. And you will find that doing nothing for 10 or 15 minutes, usually writing is more fun.
Mm-hmm.
And you will more likely to use up your hour, your allotted time as a result of saying it's nothing or writing for this allotted time. I leave my phone downstairs. I disconnect my computer from the internet so I don't get a pop-up interruption. Like, I literally just slip into the ether.
Yeah.
So, when you nest for a new project, as you're building your nest for the winter, Justin, describe to us the fluffy parts and the sturdy parts that you build around you.
Okay. So right now I'm working on a graphic novel that's a big one. It's going to be a 200-page plus graphic novel called Spark Chasers. It's a strategy guide for a game that doesn't exist. So I'm telling this big story in a strategy guide format for people around my age who are nostalgic for the days of strategy guides and playing games. And some of us don't have 60 to 100 hours to put into these big epic RPG games anymore. And this book is meant to distill that experience into like a 2-hour reading experience. So when I get really into the production mode of things and am most productive, I find what works best is I take a day or two and kind of set up a whole bunch of scenes to knock down. So I will do some planning and sketching and have a whole bunch of scenes kind of sketched out. So I'll have a weapon shop, and I'll have the characters board a train at one point, and that becomes their vehicle. And then I have a big, elaborate, like, library scene. So those are kind of like the big three scenes I'm working on right now. And I'll get those all sketched out and ready to go. And now those require probably 8 to 10 hours each of painting. So once I have those all lined up to knock down, then I kind of separate them into elements, and they're just ready to go on my computer. And I just put on movies or shows and paint nonstop. And usually I stop when my shoulder starts to hurt.
Oh, nice. So one of my nest building exercises related to that is, and I guess it's prompted, I had a question and then I realized my own answer. So we're going to come at this backwards. So my answer to the question, these are ideas you've had all the way along and you're starting to, like,
so I guess
coalesce.
To distill my thing is I set up a whole bunch of work ahead of time. So there is no, what am I going to do next? What's my next plan? What's, I set up a whole bunch of things to knock down.
Lay it all out.
And I don't have to think about them anymore.
Right.
They're
just
all
execute.
Laid to. And that's when I'm most productive with making my posters as well. I'll plan out like 4 posters, separate the elements and work on them all at once. Just knocking out the elements one at a time. Just so there's no thinking, there's no planning, there's no more concept to figure out. It's all just work that needs to be hit.
So I do something similar in a different way. In my little writing nook right now, what I've done is I've gone through all the sketchbooks that I've carried around throughout this past year. And it's maybe an unhealthy amount of writing and scritching and sketching that I do. Like, it's at least it's hard on my back to get them all together when I have a few years of them to move around. But any idea that is related to one another, I'll go through the sketchbooks and I'll open the pages so that it's a 2-page spread of that idea. And then in another book, there's a slightly more refined version, because what one of the things we've talked about doing on this show is when you're moving one idea, when you're switching sketchbooks, take an idea that you're not done with,
And start
your new sketchbook with that. And
usually
I
remix
iteration.
It a little bit, right?
Remix, like, refresh it. So I now, right now, waiting for me, I'm looking forward to it tonight, I have a number of elements from that short story all laid out in these different 2-page spreads from all these different sketchbooks and all the ideas that sort of circle around them. And why that's sort of, why I'm looking forward to it is I also know in those same sketchbooks is something that I tend to do throughout the year, which is I'll write down a couple of sentences as seeds in my mind, like a mnemonic device for a person I saw either in a coffee shop or on the street or in an airport or had an interaction with that is in my mind a fully formed character that is usable. Like a cast of thousands is waiting for me there. And I'm going to populate this busy scene that I have to write with all of these actual people elements that I've collected, little turns of phrase to describe different stuff. Kind of like the ingredient list, I'm going to mix it up. It's never as good as I think it is. This is a fun caveat, is that I'm always like, yes, I'm so brilliant. I'm going to use this writing. It's so great. And then I look at it, I'm like, wow, this needs a lot of work. I've got to work real hard. But that first step of not having to wonder, I don't have to face the blank page.
Yeah.
I'm just going to collect a bunch of stuff and then start to refine it is a really, really fun for me. And then in this particular project, I have a bunch of graphic design elements also, which I have the layouts for and like character designs for. So I don't really remember them. And I tried not to look at them too much as I found them. I just flip through. Okay, that's that one. Stack. So I have a whole bunch of them all together. And that's sort of how I'm building my nest for the next little while.
I think that's a common thing that we have and a lot of other successful artists that we hang out with have, is they are constantly sketching down ideas and plans that they do not have time for right now, but future them can hopefully distill all those into something or other.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like you're a little more like actively searching in your past for these.
Well, and I find it's necessary for me to do that past searching because mm-hmm. I have a very tight professional deadline on this film script project. And I have, whenever you have a real tight deadline, the procrastination monster starts to come clawing through your brain. Like, oh, I know you have to do that, but what if you did this? Mm-hmm. And so if I put all my what if you did this together, I can weaponize my procrastination so that I have a choice. It's almost like
it's
you can do nothing or you can write.
It's funny that your procrastination monster is like the opposite of most. You're productive just in other ways.
Well, I've tried to weaponize it.
You've weaponized the procrastination monster.
I've tried to weaponize it. So what I try to do is when I'm going to be working on the scriptment that I have to do, I can do anything that is the scriptment or that short story. So I'm allowed to procrastinate with stuff from that pile, but nothing else. I can't come up with anything new. I can't let the new idea sink in or distract me. And so in that way, I'm able to toggle between something that I absolutely have to do and something that I want to get done by a certain time. And then even if I am lax on one, I'm not ashamed at myself for the distraction. You know, like it used to be that I'd get distracted by going off to play like 4 hours of Street Fighter, you know, and now instead I go off and spend a couple hours, you know, making a different book.
Oh, probably. Darn, I made a new book.
Right. So now, being finished a book and publishing a book are not the same thing. And so, dear listener, recognize that each NaNoWriMo has created for me a husk of some monstrous draft that are not always anything more than that practice. There's been many times where NaNoWriMo or things like it, writing sprints like that, have only produced something that is unusable as a product, hanging air quotes around that, but was very useful to me as a person who is trying to get good at writing.
I think, yeah, it's a necessary stepping stone to something better. Yeah. Your NaNoWriMo might not necessarily turn into something that's going to, become anything other than amazing practice.
Yeah.
And set you up for that next book project or writing sample that's actually going to go somewhere.
Who cares about the fifth Earl of Bastrop and Lady Higginbottom and who killed Nigel Grinch Gibbons?
I could feel my butt getting sore already.
But has it turned into something usable for you?
Oh, many times.
Okay, yeah. Like, what are some of the pieces you've written in NaNoWriMo?
The short story, I think the short story that became Automatic Age started as a NaNoWriMo project. My Witch Police project back in the day started as a NaNoWriMo project. My Imagination Manifesto graphic novel started originally as a novel that I started in NaNoWriMo back in like 2006 or whatever.
Huh. How long has NaNoWriMo been going on?
That's a great question. If only one of us was a producer with a computer.
Oh, am I supposed to do this?
No, I'm going to look it up right now. So you can ask the prompt once I know. How long?
I'm just curious. I became aware of it, I think, when I met you guys and just met more writers and who did it.
I heard about it from you and Sam. I definitely didn't know about it.
I was not familiar, but I'm familiar with other things like Movember.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be growing a mustache. I already have a beard. So
there you go.
Thank you.
National Novel Writing Month began in 1999 as a daunting but straightforward challenge to write 50,000 words of a novel in 30 days. Now each year, on November 1st, hundreds of thousands of people around the world begin to write, determined to end the month with a first draft of a novel.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's do it.
That actually makes sense because my wife and I got together in 1999, and that's also formulates in my early years, those formative years when I had also told myself, like, this is something I'm going to do.
Mm.
So That's interesting. I had assumed it had been going on longer than that.
Yeah. Interesting. So,
great.
Cool.
But whenever you found out about it, it's always good to
you
have a schedule.
You know what? It's also around the time where word count was something that was easily accessible. You know?
That's true.
You could go into your Word document and access the word count. Prior to that, I'm not sure how 1985 writers were supposed to, you know, like...
Well, you counted them.
Yeah,
They must have.
You had a.
They've always used word count as a measurement.
You had a burned out cigarette in your hands, and you peered through your foggy glasses at the typewriter, and you said, one, two, three, and that's how you figured out your word. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, that or the trained raven on your shoulder would keep count for you.
All right.
Writing used to be so much cooler.
It did used to be so much cooler.
Well, speaking of cool, let's talk about the Winnipeg Comic Con just wrapped up.
It was so cool.
It was a lot of fun. I went there to cover it. First time I've actually had gotten to cover it from CTV because I've pitched it before, but never have they. Although we've always kind of sent a camera there to show, you know, all the stuff happening.
Yeah, you came strutting in with your press pass.
I had a press pass and everything. Yeah.
Didn't need our pass.
No, I did not. But I know that, and actually their PR person, Pamela Ross, she's awesome. I know her well. She's a graduate of her program. And she's very helpful. And I came in there to do a in pictures, which is a CTV thing where they just basically take a photo. And I was very, like, it was very nicely run. Everyone seemed happy and a good crowd, and everyone was doing well. Like, it was great energy, I would say, overall.
Yeah, most
very, very
people were happy.
Yeah, as far as I know, most people were. Yes, that's a good little bit of foreshadowing in there. But
I saw, I will say, the one, I did kind of take a swing by Guest Alley. I did see Paul Sung-Young Lee, I think is his last name. I always mix it up with Kim because he played on Kim's Convenience. But he was taking a picture with all the Mandalorian mercs when I was walking by, which is very cool. Because he's Carson in The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Like, he's a character.
He's also going to be the new Uncle Iroh in
Avatar.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Honestly, could you have a more perfect casting?
No, he is perfect.
Yeah, no, that's going to be awesome. So very, very cool to see him. But yeah, great event overall. Go ahead.
And I'll just say also, he has a very good reputation on the show floor behind the scenes. So
he's one of the few actors that, like, every time he's at a show, I see him walking artist alley and vendors and actually checking things out.
Yeah, that's cool.
So for him to be exposed to a whole new fandom, you know, which will, you know, theoretically.
Actually, yeah, he might not be able to do that soon. He might be getting a little too famous.
We'll see what happens.
Mr. Ted Raimi came by the booth.
He's my favorite.
We chatted horror movies and new projects and toyed around with the idea of working together on something. So that was a fun and unexpected exchange.
Did you say, holy shit, you're Ted Raimi?
No. Well,
that's
honestly
what I would say.
I just saw Ted Raimi. You know, my niece, when he left, who is very much younger than me, was like, so, was that guy famous? And my booth mate, James Gillespie, and writing partner, James, he was in the back of the booth on the phone with his sister, saying, oh my gosh, Ted Raimi's here. But for me, it was just just somebody else who wants to talk about horror movies and comics, and I'm there for it. I promise you, I'm there
for it.
It's
part of the magic of Comic-Con.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it is. It really is. You're right. Yeah. Yes.
There was, like, some woman came by the booth, and I didn't recognize her, don't know who she was, but she was there with, like, two guest liaison people. Like, they had guest liaison badges, and some bigger guy who I'm assuming was security.
Yeah.
I have no, like, and you're just having a normal interaction, but in the back of your mind, it's like, this person's really famous for something.
For something.
Right now, we're just going to talk about how much we like robots.
And that's it, right? Yeah. You're just having a connection, a conversation with another person, right? Yeah. So in that moment, it's not Ted Raimi, Sam Raimi's brother, and the person who's done all these crazy movies and done all these and been killed so many times on screen. It's just another guy who likes that stuff, right? And you're just talking.
That's it, exactly. And he was so kind with his time and so approachable and so, like, just very interested in the source material from which I draw my inspiration and very fluent in all of it. So it was, as you might imagine, the Raimis would be.
Yeah.
So it was a great interaction. The show overall was so good, not just, fiduciarily. It was a nice...
I was telling Dan, it's like one of my best Winnipeg shows of all time. It was a great year.
Yeah.
And good attendance, as far as I could tell.
Yes.
They had, I think... up, they said, anywhere between 10 and 20%, depending. They have to do some final counts.
Sure.
But they said over 30,000. They announced over 30,000 attendees.
And that's for sure true. But there also might be...
we have to qualify that.
Dear listener, he says that because in the past, we've been to a lot of Comic-Cons that like fluff their numbers a little bit and kind of count people when they go in and out and then back in again. That counts as... two attendees, not the same person.
Right. Anyway.
And yeah, that anyways.
So those things are, I think, important to make a distinction. I also had done the Winnipeg Comic-Con beer label.
Oh, yeah. So, you have another adventure for, what's his name, Pumpkinhead? No.
Yeah, well, it's Pumpkin Seed is the character. No, that's okay.
Because he regrows every year.
He regrows every year. Last year he, I have never decided, and nor do I need to. Pumpkin Seed grew as Chainsaw Hand, which was a nod to the featured guest, Bruce Campbell. And this year, The Whistler, as a nod to Michael Rooker.
Michael Rooker, he was here, yeah.
And for you beer drinkers, it is a very nice lager with like a bit of hoppy bitterness to it, but not too hoppy at all if you're not into that kind of thing. It's a very easy drinking beer.
A pale ale.
Okay.
In partnership with Transcan Brewery. Yeah. And they told me that they sold out completely in one day at the distributor level around Manitoba and then had one of their best event sales related to a sort of featured
ordered four times like the amount of beer that something they brought last year.
It must be the label.
Yeah, so I don't want to take any credit, but I'd love it if you could give me that credit when you are talking on their social media.
Having like a fun beer at a Comic-Con, like it just those two things fit together, you know, like let's go check out all the nerdy things and have like a pumpkin themed horror beer at the same time.
I do have
just fits.
I do have some trepidation around a all ages event and then a promotion related to beer drinking. There was a little piece of me on the inside that wondered, is this a good synergy? And so I'll let you know how my where my principles lie as we go forward. But I will say that such a fun experience because they also printed limited edition posters as a chase item. So anyone that was interested, whether they bought a beer or not, and this was kind of the part I liked about it, was if a kid came up and was not interested or, you know, they can't buy beer, obviously, but just like the character, we made a poster that didn't have anything to do with the beer itself, just the cool character that they could run, and I would do a free sketch for them and sign it. And so it became a fun chase item. And we have all kinds of ideas for next year because once you have three things, it's not...
Rule of threes. It's a real thing.
Yeah.
Yep. You have a trilogy.
Now, people, I'm going to say to you, Wallace Beery, wrestling, it's a B picture. You tell them. Bullshit! We do not make B pictures here in Capitol. Let's put a stop to that rumor right now.
I did see quite a bit. I was only there for not too long, like maybe half an hour, an hour. And I saw in that time a few people do the chase with you guys with Dead Work.
Oh, yeah.
And that was happening quite a bit. Where, and you, Lyndon, was just over there, so you kind of had a bit of a Dead Work circle going.
Yeah, hats off to the Dead Work Collective.
So for the dear listener who's newer to the podcast, Dead Work was an anthology project that myself and Gregory and Stephen Call and Lyndon Ruchenka, Jonathan Ball, Zach Schuster, there's 12 artists in total, had short stories collected together in an anthology. Some are sci-fi, some are horror, some are thrillers, some are fantasy. So it's a real charcuterie board of an anthology. Very different styles, very different stories. And what we found the best part of this project is a lot of us in this book do Comic-Cons. We're all in the same artist alley. And when somebody buys Dead Work from my table, I get to them send them on a chase to like, you're going to have to go find Gregory. He's somewhere over there. And then you have to go find Lyndon and Steven. They're over there. And Zach somewhere over there. And they're all going to do free sketches for you. And people love that, okay, now we have this item that we get to go get a bunch of free stuff added to.
Yeah, it doesn't cost them anything extra. It's just the activity of going around.
Absolutely no incurred cost there.
No.
They're just, if they're willing to go on the adventure and track it down, we are there for it. And we try to outdo each other's sketches on a regular basis.
So I'll often say, like, Gregory's sketch won't be as good, but he's going to try, bless his
heart.
Why
do you ask him? Yeah.
Tell him I said that, he'll try extra hard.
Yeah, so it's really fun in that way. So, dear listener, if you're wondering, like, what a good thing to do with your other booth mates or people who you know are going to be at the show. If you can find some way to give some added value to a con attendee, this is a really easy way to do it.
Yeah. And wearing the business hat for a while, we kind of figured out, we've all kind of noticed that about 1 in 3 people that have that dead work to get signed end up buying something at one of our tables, right? Like if they bought it from Gregory, 1 in 3 people that he sends over is also probably going to grab something of mine.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is a browsing item, they flip through it and they might be getting it from my table, but the art that really spoke to them was Zach's or Justin's, right? And so when they finally go and they find Zach or Justin, I think that's what's unlocking right there. Is they're like, oh, this is the thing that actually made me want Dead Work in the first place. That's you.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, that's cool.
And so that's a real fun element. At one point,
here it is. Here's the hot goss.
At one point, a person came to my table and very aggressively addressed one of my my co-writer James about their treatment at the show.
They were not having the best time.
They were not having the best time. Experience. And they okay. So I will preface the following by saying, there is a really big difference between a grievance, a legitimate grievance, and an attack. And there is a very different, there's a careful way in which you can take your anger, frustration about how you feel you've been treated, and turn it into a plan so that change can occur. This is different than creating a plan of attack. And I think that is important. Back in my misspent youth, I once helped organize a work stoppage, and we didn't do it all in the same day. We were very angry, and we
arranged... You checked your emotions and didn't react out of anger.
Right,
that's right.
You took a minute. Okay, what can we actually do? What's some actionable things that would get results?
So we followed a plan rather than a plan of attack, and as a result, we were in a position of strength. We were able to take action. We were able to bring all the people who were decision makers into the circle, make our demands, and when they weren't met, we had an action to follow up with. A plan of attack is something a little different, which I think we see more and more now.
And this is what happened on the weekend?
Social media style, I think. So again, I'm trying to frame it properly. The passion that this person presented was real. Their frustration was real. Their grievances on many points, legitimate. But because the actions were formulated as an attack against the convention organizers, without, I think, due course taken to see who's actually to blame for these things that
I perceive.
So
what were some of the things they were upset about?
Yeah, can you
tell
us what happened, actually?
So here's what really happened. I just want to...
Yeah, no prefacing. Let's go.
Yeah. Just a little prefacing. We're trying to keep it pleasant.
They had a petition.
Someone showed up with a petition. They had a long list of grievances, which can be briefly summarized as there should be no unlicensed work for sale. There should be no... blind boxes ever for sale at shows.
Like those mystery boxes.
Like the industry that sprung up around those things.
And that there should be priority given to artists in Artist Alley over vendors.
Which,
and
good
that,
Lord, at this show.
Just hold on. You asked it, I'm giving you the answer. And that artists on the Comic-Con floor, like people who are artists and not vendors, should be part of the conversation about how the floor is laid out, and it should some tools should be provided to them in order to make better use of that time. Now, before we jump all over this list, here's one good thing. They had actually put it together as a list. That had been thoughtfully presented. Whether or not you agree with them, and I can see from your faces that you
don't
agree.
I'm just wondering, what does James have to do with this?
Right? Well, he was just the person standing behind the booth.
Oh, okay.
So he was the one who was kind of
he looked like the boss.
Oh, I see.
He looked like the boss.
He does look like a boss.
He does look like a boss.
Right? And he does, big handsome James does have boss energy. So he was approached in that way. So I interceded to ask what the fuss was about and to hear the list of grievances.
But he just, sorry, just to interrupt, he just... decided to approach your table out of all these tables?
They did approach our table. No, they were approaching lots of tables.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's another part of the story. Yes.
There were lots of signatures on the petition.
Oh, they were going over trying to get signatures. I get it.
Right. Okay. It was a petition. And I said, this is a really, I think, brave and important step for making change. And I thank them for doing a step that so few people do these days, which is the groundwork of collecting who agrees and then presenting that to the people in charge, which is what they were planning to do, before they run off to social media and make a mess. Unfortunately, that praise I gave them had come a little too late because they had already gone to social media and made a big mess.
Oh.
And they had accused a license holder, someone who had legitimately was a license holder, pays annually and exorbitantly to be a license holder for many licensed properties, accused them of selling only bootlegs. And it went viral and it caused a big stir. And these are people who have worked very hard to build their business, took great offense to it, unfounded accusation. But also it put them in a position where their license is now at risk because
they've been accused of this.
They've been accused of it, right? So this was one. And they have the capacity and the will to take legal action and honestly, the grounds. For that kind of defamation. So it was not a great situation. But I will say this. As the fervor was building and as I was trying to just play middle ground for this person, I assured them that if they had ever been to any other Comic-Con, they would see that the people who run the Winnipeg, Ottawa, Quebec, and Montreal shows are the same group of people. They're not a faceless group. It's like seven people. And they travel with the show. They hear the grievances, they listen to the grievances, and I had personally with my own eyes, witnessed them take direct action for ejecting AI artists, people who were violating license holdings, proof provided, they took action.
They're willing to discuss it if you come at them in the right way, right?
At this show, there was a vendor who had orders their stuff from China, and one of their vendors sold them art of an artist that was there, and the vendor had this bootlegged art of an artist, and the artist brought this complaint to the organizers. The organizer went to the vendor and explained, and the vendor didn't realize that they had purchased bootlegged artwork. They thought it was legitimate, took it all down. But like a good example of something that could have been a mess was handled very professionally and was immediately taken care of, and everybody's happy at the end.
And the show presents it as a zero tolerance.
Your
options are take the offending work away or leave, right? Yeah. And so because they take that very seriously, they, could have very easily diffused the entire situation with some straight up conversation.
Put the policy case down and your mitts in the air.
But almost like we had summoned the person themselves, the woman in charge of the show floor, arrived at that moment, literally while I was saying, this show, beyond many others, really does give a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They arrived right in the middle of my explanation of that and said, hey, how's things going? Is there anything I can do for you? What's going on? And then looked at the situation and said, oh. Am I in trouble? Is there something we can do to fix whatever this is? Just took a read of the situation of an unhappy person with an exhibitor badge.
And
right?
said, what can I do to what make it right?
What can I do to make it right? Yeah. So it could not have, it actually couldn't have been better timing. And then those two went off to address the grievances, address the problem of that video, address the problems.
What was the video? What are the, like?
Well, I don't want to cause any more trouble for them, but in general terms, it was just a video of a booth that they thought had violated a whole bunch of licenses.
They actually just recorded it and posted
this to TikTok, and it had hundreds of thousands, multiple hundreds of thousands of views, and lots of comments. And people started showing up at the booth in question and booing
them.
And
oh man,
you know, all this kind of. and it turned out to be completely unfounded.
Yeah, okay, right? That's not good.
Yeah, right? No.
So the mob mentality is dangerous. You know, the mob is powerful, and I'm a union guy. The mob is powerful, all right? But you don't just make a plan of attack. Make sure you have a good plan of action.
Yeah, that's
right?
That's a good lesson for
do
anybody.
A little bit of research, too.
Yeah, anybody following on TikTok, that's happened a couple times with TikTok. At Polo Park in our mall here in the city, a bunch of people just showed up. And these are just teenagers who have hundreds of thousands of followers because that's who they just end a viral video. I wouldn't put too much weight into the viral video. That's going to be like forgotten in 2 seconds. So don't worry about
that.
Well,
the video's been taken down.
Yeah, I'm sure. As far as people seeing it, like nobody's we're going to have that lingering thought that this person is bootlegging. But it's unfortunate that it translates into a real world situation where somebody could be hurt or somebody like tempers can overflow and somebody, you know, I just don't like this.
And I don't know what it is, but I was told there is a Discord, which I guess really is pun intended in this case, of the people who were dissatisfied with this scenario that was going on. And so what's kind of the beautiful thing about the internet and our connectivity now is that people who feel wronged can check the temperature and say, is this just me or is this someone else? And the echo chamber can be dangerous, but it can also be very necessary for you to build up the guts to say, like, I'm not the only person that feels this way.
Yes.
And someone's got to do something.
Mad as hell. I'm not going to take this anymore.
Right. And it takes bravery to be that person. Yeah. And so that's what I was trying to, I hope that came across with this person that came to me with the petition. Like, I think what you're doing is very brave and very necessary. I think the way in which you're doing it maybe is a little too firing from the hip. And the petition was a good step. That should have been step one.
It shows that there are enough people interested in it that you should look at it.
Well,
right?
Okay,
right.
So here's the other thing that we heard after this had all kind of died down the next day. The organizer had been texted kind of during the heat of this from another vendor saying, like, hey, just so you know what's going on, there's a person going around very aggressively asking us to sign a petition, and we really didn't want to sign it, but we wanted to get this person basically out of our face.
So you had signed it to get rid of him.
So right, yeah. We signed it to get rid of him, but we have, like, yeah, we have nothing but great things to say about the show, and we're so sorry we did that, but, like, you should know this is happening, and it made us very uncomfortable.
Now, one of their grievances, which I think is important to address because it speaks to the nature and quality of the people behind the Winnipeg Comic Con. One of the grievances is that shows are really expensive now to attend.
They are.
Right? Not just for the people who want to just come and kick around the show floor, but if you're a vendor or you're in Artist Alley, it can be prohibitively expensive for you to take your artwork and give it a shot. And so all that, the 2 days previous to this, I had been talking with people from Prairie Comics Festival and people who are at the Winnipeg Comic Con and trying to figure out a way in which we could sponsor a number of booths where people who just want to try it for the first time could try it sort of as a sponsorship.
So Anime Revo has kind of figured this out.
Yeah.
They do one-day booths.
Right.
So if it's a three-day event, if you're not ready for a full three-day show for a much cheaper table rate, you get this, there's this whole aisle that is specifically for one day vendors. So
you give it a shot.
You just set up on the Friday and you set down on the Friday. And then Saturday, a new group's coming.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so it is a fraction of the cost. You can split tables up.
Yeah.
And it's kind of really neat because you get to see this, like, part of the floor is, like, changing every day.
It's a reason to come back and check it out. Yeah.
And people who have full-time jobs, people who aren't ready for, like, a three-day big commitment and that price tag that comes with a lot of tables, like, it... Yeah, I think
that's a great
more
plan B.
Doing that.
Our other plan is focused around finding. Well, we sort of have a print sponsor who would sponsor those people and help them with the cost of the printing, because it can be an experiment and a costly one to see if anyone likes your stuff. The venue to provide a table space for that person. Prairie Comics to provide some of the vetting for people, meaning basically, like, are you putting into the community? Are you showing up for the community events? Oh, well, then the community is going to support and return the favor by giving you this place. And those, all those things working together. So, but of course, you can't announce that as if it's happening until it's official. And so, of course, there's nobody knows that this is going on in the background. And so if you are demanding that everything be cheaper, not realizing that also, it's one of the lowest cost tables for a show of that size.
I was going to say, I don't think this person has done any shows other than the Winnipeg Comic Con and Icon. But holy crap, you guys. I have been doing hundreds of conventions all over the world. Winnipeg has the most reasonably priced tables of any convention. And you don't have to, you're not, like, you have no idea how good you have it. Things have gotten so much better.
I think that certainly for this Winnipeg Comic Con, this new group of people that have been in for the last couple of years, their way of doing things is a bit jarring. Compared to like the previous, I realized the previous management of previous con was trying to do this, but they didn't really achieve it as far as like mimicking things like San Diego or New York Comic Con and the way it looks and the branding and the programming, all these different things. It very much feels like that. But to somebody who's been going to Winnipeg Comic Cons for a lot of time, I could see how that would feel like over commercialization. It does go in hand in hand with higher admission prices. Yeah. Like it's more $50 or whatever for the day. That's a lot. That's now, if you were there for the programming, I would pay it because they had incredible guests this year.
And this
incredible
one thing they guests. Added this year over previous years was lots more to do that cost no more
that's
than
right.
your
yes.
admission.
Okay, that's what they have to do is add more things. More
my sons went and
added.
Played 3 hours of video games in this huge video game area they had. Then they watched a film, and then they went and sat in some paneling, and then they walked the show floor. And so what happens when you add that, dear listener, and people who are vending at those shows, there's usually a corresponding dip in people shopping because there's more to do.
Yeah.
But then the next year is a corresponding upswing of people who've heard there's lots to do that doesn't cost extra money. And that is the reason why they come to their first Comic-Con. Oh, yeah. There's a whole bunch to do. So you end up with this swing back upwards in attendance, which usually has a corresponding effect on the actual show floor. So the whole thing is connected, and they're doing a really good job, I think, of not growing too fast. And
yes, exactly. I was talking to... Well, actually, I didn't interview anybody this year. I just did based on clips that I... That
you're interviewing us right now.
Not really. but I just... We sent a camera there on Sunday to talk to an organizer to get some final thoughts, some final numbers, and that basically I wrote an article based on that, and it took a look at the 3 years that it's been here, and they have grown... They've done a great job of expanding a little bit. They're not doing too much. Yeah. They're just kind of, okay, here's... Let's try a little bit more. Let's try something new. But the guests, like, I don't think it's too expensive. It's the cost it needs to be for people. Like they're basing their price on venue rental and all the other stuff. And I can't imagine how complicated that must be. As somebody who's run a very small, much smaller convention, it's incredibly complicated on that scale. But it's a necessary price. They have to give us things to do while you're there.
Yeah.
And that is, and so a lot of people look at that $40 or $50 to get in there. Pff, I'm not paying that. That's why you're just paying money to go buy stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, they have to really make that more clear that it's not just going to buy stuff. You're doing all kinds of other things there.
Maybe we should do a treatment. Hell. Let Bob take a crack at it. He'll get in the swing of things, or I don't know writers.
They're very much pushing the autographs and the photo ops. Those also cost money, right? Mm-hmm. So that's also something you have to pay for. Mm-hmm. So there's that as well. But I don't know. It's a great con. I think they're doing a great job. I can understand some of the trepidations people have around it.
It's a good thing this person came to you to complain. I don't think I would have been nearly as diplomatic in my response.
Well, they had gone through a lot, and I'd been there before. Like I said, once in my misspent youth, I organized a work stoppage at a hotel. And so I know what it can, what it can mean to try and make some change. And, that's something to be admired, people who are willing to take it on the chin in the hopes of making change.
Just the fact that this convention would actually probably listen to them and maybe try to make changes, 99.9% of other conventions would just kick them out, ban them for life, and go on business as usual.
Yeah, pretty much.
So if you are a member of that Discord we were talking about, or if you have more knowledge about this, or you feel that
we've... Come on the podcast.
Yeah, or you feel we've mischaracterized the story in any way whatsoever, please reach out to us if you want to come on and tell your side of the story. We would be more than happy to entertain it here on the show. One of the lists of grievances was related to building capacity in the Artist Alley community for the ability to table sort of profitably at shows. That's sort of what this podcast
Wait,
is all
say
about.
That again?
They wanted the show to help artists
grow.
Do better at the show
yeah.
and grow. Now, you may say to yourself,
what does that
why
mean?
Is why does that have to do with them? I agree with you in part.
What does that mean?
Well,
teach
I don't
them
know.
How to vend.
What?
Teach them how to sell their stuff? Is that what that means?
I don't know exactly.
Oh, make it
so,
cheaper for them. So
I think how I understood it was, yes, teach us how to vend or tell us what the surge times for crowds would be so we know how to prepare or, you know, I don't know.
That's not on the convention.
I'd love to know more of that.
That's not on, you're right.
That's
it's
not on the convention.
No. They need to be listening to this podcast.
That's what, yeah, that's what Super Bulb Science is for.
That's right.
But also, like, they
that's the science.
But they
part
do
of
what
Bulb
you guys
science.
Did. They look at what's happening around them. They make an assessment. They create a space within this huge, crazy place that will draw attention, that will bring people who are interested yeah. to them. And they learn from seeing what other people are doing.
It's like complaining to the NHL that we're not winning enough games. Like, fix it for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need to get better.
I've always felt, you know, more than 10 years doing this show, if it's really busy and no one's stopping. That's me.
Yeah, yeah.
That's on me.
Or if it's
really
they're
busy. They're giving you foot traffic,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
They're giving
yeah.
you, they're delivering.
That's all they
that.
Can
yeah.
do. That's all. They can That's only right. deliver the bodies and everything else for their attention is up to you.
And, yeah. and sometimes, too, like there's lots of bodies, but nobody's buying things. I'll look around. If it's crowded and nobody's carrying anything yet, it's too early in the morning. People aren't ready to purchase yet.
Or, here's a pro tip. We may have said this before. If you see someone at a show with a three-day pass, just remember, you're an ambassador to your booth. They got 3 days. Their wallet's probably in their car.
If it's right. They have a Friday badge and it's near the end of the day Friday, you aggressively
no,
say,
don't do that. Don't do what Justin
It is your
said.
Last That's chance. Right.
No,
you squeeze every
like
last
that.
Dollar.
Glenn, Gary, Glenn, or us.
No. Just be respectful that browsing yeah. is sometimes all people can afford. It's fine. And
it's
don't
okay.
take
yes.
it so personally. Oh, my goodness. Like, I went to the movies last night, and there were so many trailers for movies I could not care less about. But that doesn't mean those people didn't work hard on those movies. Yeah. It's just not for me, right? This is what's happening at the table. Your table is the trailer for a movie maybe someone doesn't want to watch.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's fine. Just let them see it and move on. It's your chance to just share your work with a new group of people every couple of minutes. My goodness. That's amazing.
Like every once in a while, you and I will have like a down show or a bad show or we feel like we could do better. But what we tend to do is start reinventing things a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, for the next show, this isn't working. So maybe if I, you know, make the books the focus or start printing out different like bigger banners or plop
yeah.
these up. See what that guy is handing out thumbnail sheets. Maybe I should try that.
Yeah, that's us.
You know,
by
like
the way, that guy you're pointing at, that's us.
That's where everything at the booth came from was looking around and seeing people doing it better and taking notes and like building a list of like, okay, I need to have some kind of backstand. I need to have a portfolio. I can't just have prints on the table.
Yep.
I need to have print stands. Okay.
Even if you have no idea what to do as a, I don't know what you'd call this, a marketer, just walk through the show floor, and when you stop to look at something,
why did you stop to look?
Ask yourself, what brought me here?
I love when people are there for their, like, they're there for research. I don't have a table this year. I'm going to have it next year, and I'm here to, like, figure things out.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
Makes me excited for them.
One
doing
person
it the right
sign,
way.
Shout out, you know who you are. Their sign said, if you don't buy my comic, my mom is going to whoop my ass. Right?
And was their mom right there?
No, but it's funny. And they're, you know, they're starting out with their first comic. It's the indie thing. And
yep.
they're young and they're fresh-faced. And it's funny. And everyone has a mom they wish cared more, right? or someone who has thought derisively about their choice to be an artist. So it lands perfectly. And so on the very least, you have that. Someone else had a sign, a little word bubble that they held up by their head.
I didn't like this person.
Yeah, I didn't like it quite so much. What did it say? I don't even know.
Ask me about my comic.
Yeah, ask me about my comic.
But then they would also aggressively shout at you as you walked by. Hey, you want to hear about my... Like, you weren't anywhere close. Like, I was clearly on my way to the bathroom every
time. So even
time.
If they're ignoring the sign, he's still insisting on telling them
so
about
this
his
is a
comic.
Separate person. This is so there's the one way to do it is like humor, passive humor.
That would work. If
check
you just shut up and
me.
Sat there, it would have worked.
Check mark for me. The other person with the sign that was like, do you want to see my comic? Also, it's a silent little word bubble. I think that's great.
No, he
it's
shouted.
Passive.
He was-
But once you break that essential promise of I'm not going to bother you if you want to keep going and bother you anyway, the magic is gone.
Yeah, according to Zach, it was working. He had people checking out his comics often. So
did Zach, was that Zach that did that?
No.
Zach was within eyeshot of this guy.
He was our first-hand account of this group.
So I really don't like tactics like that, but I mean...
It's like those bus benches that have the little like puppy or purse on them. Have you seen those? I just popped my peas two times. The fake bus benches with the fake pictures on it. Have you not seen that around the city?
I'm going to fine you for unnecessary alliteration.
Do you know? I know exactly alliteration is unnecessary ever. It's the best thing ever. Bus benches.
Say that as an alliteration?
You've never seen a bus bench with that with a little picture of a purse on it.
Oh, like it looks like
it looks like someone left a purse there. That's what that is. It's made you look. That's kind of it. And then that doesn't work. It doesn't work.
Yeah, like light up pillars, you know? They just made you look.
Man.
Or a giant ziggurat of posters.
Oh, my goodness.
I was joking with Lyndon and Steven saying I couldn't see them. Their ziggurat wasn't quite high enough. I couldn't see them from the entrance because they've got it pretty high now. They're part of as high as you guys.
Yeah. We, ladies and gentlemen, we're part of the problem.
You are.
We're part of the problem. But again, you know, more than 10 years in, and a book or two every year for 10 years, and you're trying to display that in a way that doesn't just, you know, that's...
Sensory overload.
Yeah, sensory overload. I mean, it is sensory overload. It is. But we're trying to give enough room for you to actually... And we mean it. One of the things that everyone that helps at the booth and my booth, I train people to say, if they can pick up the book or they want to flip through the portfolio, that's where you... Do nothing else. If they're into it, they'll ask the follow-up question. If they disengage, say, thanks for looking, and off they go. Mm-hmm. But we are browsing friendly.
Yeah.
And the only way to know if you like a book is spend a few minutes with it. And the only way to give you the space to spend a few minutes with the book is to have a lot of space at the show so that if other people are jostling, you have a little like oasis to actually spend a minute or two with the book. Good. So that's like what I'm trying to build at my table and why we have so much space at the home show.
You can facilitate that now.
That's
You've
right.
earned it.
Yeah.
And then you achieve the opposite of that by yelling at people as they pass your table and trying to pressure them into...
I think so.
Right? Yeah. And if you're too intense and you're sitting there watching them read, you're watching them like over their shoulder.
That's right. Oh, yeah. And one of the things that I really like about how I navigate around the booth has more to do with I don't want to feel that anxiety. So if someone's looking at my book, I don't want to stand near them while they're reacting.
Right.
I want to be away. So it
they might be thinking bad things about it.
Right? It gives me the opportunity to turn the corner around the booth and whatever. So that was good.
All right.
So to come back around to the nest building here, we've been through our season of growth, and now winter is coming, and we need to build a little den, and we got to pack it with all the things that make it possible to make work, things that make you comfortable. Those things could just be the media you love to consume. Do that, dear listener. Pack it in around yourself. A little bit of a schedule so that you're free of the anxiety of, did I do anything today? Just know that if you spend an hour, heck, even 20 minutes on your lunch hour, putting some of your ideas onto a page, you've done the work. You're building that little nest around you for creativity. And we hope here at Super Pulp Science that that will yield a springtime of projects. This has been Super Pulp Science. I'm Gregory Kamichuk, encouraging you to join the fight and make comics.